Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ruby Writer's special edition podcast number 3. This podcast is with the same young man who decided to go to a professional for his virginal pegging experience. And this man went back a second time and was kind enough to call up and have a lovely conversation with me about his entire experience, plus a lot of information about an experience he had regarding prostate health, which actually is what led him to understand that his prostate was capable of giving him all kinds of pleasure. There's a lot of material here. It's an entire hour, so I really hope you enjoy it. Without further ado, here we go.
All right, day 2.
Mm-hmm. So you've had some further adventures, I hear.
Yeah, I ended up having to go back.
I like the way you say that, having to go back.
Yeah, because I didn't actually get to the full experience. So I had to go back and get the full experience of actually being pegged. And the first time she was just playing with the toys with me, but the second time she actually did the deed and de-virginized me officially.
And when you say that she did the deed, she actually strapped it on?
She strapped it on.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was it like?
It was incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. Yeah.
So now from last time, I remember you saying that there's no touching. And I just have a hard time imagining how a woman can peg a guy and not really get into the touching.
I think there wasn't like a whole lot of it. I mean, she's pretty judicious about what she does, because I think that she's got a pretty strong set of rules.
So was it easier to relax this time?
It was.
Sweet.
It was. Yeah. I actually got to step into the role for the first time, like the receiver. So that was it was a trip and a rush at the same time.
Mm.
It was fun.
What did you like the best about it?
It's hard to let go. I think that's something you have to practice.
Mm-hmm.
I had a few moments of it where I just relinquished control.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not used. I mean, obviously, this is early experience. I'm not used to giving up that much control.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting when the last few, like I don't even know how long the time frame was when she was doing it, but at some point I completely let her take control, and that was an unusual feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a guy, I'm just so used to taking control.
And sure.
So it's kind of the ultimate way of relinquishing control. It's not even like, you know, it's not even like a conventional thing where she's pushing me and throwing me on the bed and we're just having conventional sex. I mean, I'm receiving it. So it's kind of a double. I mean, it's everything you talk about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was fun.
Yeah, the whole being penetrated thing. I think that's what involves the most letting go. I mean, that's the challenge for women too, is to relax and let go.
Yeah, yeah, and it very profoundly puts me in a position where I can really relate to what a woman does. Talk about how the women who strap it on have to learn how to use it.
Yes.
It vice versa as well. I mean, it gives me an appreciation of what it's like for a woman to be penetrated and to give into that control.
That's what most men say, even though they may not use those words. They all express something very similar to that.
Yeah, and she expressed that she was having a good time too. So that was nice. She was into it too.
Yeah, that's always nice, because you always want to think that someone, even if you're paying someone, I would imagine that you still want to think that they're having a good time and enjoying themselves.
Yeah, she definitely does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that took me out. It took me a little bit to kind of believe that, I guess. Probably my own thing. It wasn't her, you know, it wasn't her lack of enthusiasm. It was me actually like seeing it for what it was, you know, cause I am paying for ass therapy.
Paying for ass therapy. Wow. That's profound. So you mentioned before that you had had a fair amount of a lot of solo play and that you've really enjoyed that.
Yes.
The level of pleasure, like we're just talking straight pleasure as opposed to the experience and the letting go and those sorts of feelings. Were you able to attain the same level of pleasure as you do on your own?
Approaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it will require some more practice. And I think that really is getting down to letting go. I'd say I was about 80% there.
Nice.
70 or 80% there.
Mm-hmm.
More than the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, more than the first time.
Which makes sense. You get a little more comfortable.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, when I'm by myself, I pretty much am hard throughout whatever I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
With her, it was harder to stay hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's just an unfamiliarity thing too. Just my overall comfort level's not quite there, physically and or mentally. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Do you think that maybe that part of the staying hard, the not staying hard, had to do with that you were able to let go to a greater extent?
I think it's just the way, I mean, I don't know how other people are, but the way, you know, the way that I train, it's almost like I burn a pathway to arousal and orgasm.
Sure.
I'll go down the same groove a lot. And if I go down a different groove, it's harder.
Sure.
So I burn in that groove. Because if I'm alone and I stick the Eneros toy in, I'm like ready to go the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But with her working on me, it's a completely different experience. It's a little disorienting. It's a little bit, you know, it's a combination of all the new factors. And so it's not clear. It's not a new
one. Yeah. Well, not only do you have some cute girl right there, but she's actually thrusting into you, which is probably a slightly different sensation than the Eneros.
Yeah. Although I brought that. I brought the Eneros so that she could play with that too.
Mm-hmm.
That actually helped because it was more familiar. And then she kind of warmed me up with that. That helped a lot.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So that's kind of was different. It was fun. You know, I think it could get habit forming. I'm a little concerned about that.
You're a little concerned?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little concerned about that.
Well, the email that you had sent me, you mentioned something about considering approaching this through a more sexually oriented dating site and sort of leading with your kink, if you will.
That's right.
And it has been some years ago, but that's exactly what I did when I started off on my journey as I went to Adult Friend Finder, which is the website that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did an anonymous profile. I put a picture up of cleavage, and the particular part that let everybody know what was going on was they have a question. They have like sort of like essay questions, if you will. Some of them are multiple choice, but there is a whole sexual section. And in that section, there's a question and it says, describe your favorite sexual fantasy. So I took my writing skills and I thought, if I could have anything I wanted, what would I want? And I wrote it down, and it was kind of a dominant little bit of BDSM and a pegging thing. And the guys just came out of the woodwork, because I guess there's a lot of guys out there that are looking for this. But you have to dig down into the profile. There's no way to search for that. There's no way to go to this site and go, show me all the people who like to do pegging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think women tend to read profiles more completely than men. So, but it's hard to say, you know, you get it to a sexually oriented website, they start digging into that sexual information because that's where the good stuff is.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a shot. Cause it would be nice to, you know, it'd be nice to find a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. You know? Be nice to find a girlfriend who's into this too.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to find a girlfriend. I don't necessarily want to convert someone. I don't know if I don't think I would have to work that hard. I don't know. We'll have to see.
There's all kinds of stuff about that. I hear stories from all ends of the different ends of the spectrum of trying to convert. It's a touchy thing. I don't even go there anymore. When I date, I pretty much lead with my kink. If I'm on a place like OkCupid or Plenty of Fish, pretty soon after they meet me, I just send them to my website and say, you know, this is not everyone's cup of tea. If you're still interested, let me know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, about 30 to 40% of the guys just bail right off the bat. And some of them say, well, I've never done that before. It looks kind of interesting. I'm sort of, all I can do is say that I'm open to it. And sometimes that's actually not as honest as it could be. They probably don't want to do it, but they don't want to say that because they really want to date. So you go out a couple of times and then they bail. But then other guys go, oh, I love this. Yes, absolutely. When can we meet? And that's kind of fun.
Yeah. So.
But I don't know if it's going to work the same in the reverse for you, you know, because there aren't as many women looking for it as there are men.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go. It's pretty exploratory at this point, so.
Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely worth a try. I mean, as long as you don't mind paying for AFF for a while.
Yeah, that's part of it, too.
So are you going to go back?
It's getting expensive, Ruby.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, it's getting expensive. You know, it's like this is not the type of thing that you can, get a medical insurance claim on, like, you know, regular therapy.
Can't write it off in your taxes?
No, can't do that either. You know? So it's kind of expensive. I think maybe one or two more times. I don't know. I just, the idea of going kind of forever, indefinitely, not only is it expensive, but I think there would be a tendency to get dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I can see why that's an issue for guys in general, paying for it. Because it doesn't give you an outlet. I mean, I can tell you that coming out of it, now that I've done it twice, coming out of it, number one, you're hornier than hell.
Yeah,
it's crazy off the charts. It's like, you know, I think in less than 24 hours afterward, I masturbated three times in less than 24 hours.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's kind of a crazy rush. And then, you know, what happens is that after you kind of go through that, just like with a new sex partner, it's the same thing, right? You kind of crash. I can think back to like weekends, like the first, you know, girlfriends that you go away for the first weekend and you have sex all weekend. And by the time you hit Sunday night, you're just totally crash, right? You're depleted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you spent all that dopamine or whatever the neurochemistry is about, you know, the neurochemistry is, you're totally depleted. And I can see that it's kind of a similar thing. And so what happened was after the first time I kind of went through that, I had this big rush, and then, you know, a day or two afterward, I kind of crashed.
And do you mean crashed physically and or emotionally, both?
No, I would say that it's more like you're coming down off of a high.
Oh, okay.
You know, you're kind of coming down off that rush of excitement, that sexual excitement, and then it's, you know, and then you start thinking about it again, and then, you know, you get yourself going, you get going up the ramp. So, you know, you're physically depleted because you come four times in 24 hours, you know, and it's very physical what you're doing with her. Right. I'm not 18. So, you know, four times in 24 hours is probably going to tire me out a little bit. And so, yeah, so I think that I can see that there, I can definitely see the addictive quality of something like that. I would say that that's something to pay attention to.
Especially if you were someone who had unlimited funds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can see where people who do, men who are in the position of power or fame or they have unlimited funds, you know, very often we hear of them getting into addictive issues because they can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
The loss of cash is not going to affect them at all. It's not a deterrent. So that's just something. If I give anybody a warning out there, that's definitely one of them.
It can be addictive.
Yeah, it is. I would rather actually at this point find a playmate, a friend with benefits, or a girlfriend, something like that. That would be a much better deal.
Uh-huh. I know the question I have. Do you have a goal with her? Do you have like a pleasure goal or something like that that you'd like to attain?
I have an idea of getting to the point where I'm basically totally comfortable and going through the whole process and not having any kind of remaining awkwardness or remaining inhibitions about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I have that many to begin with, but being in the experience, you know, having that all be unfamiliar, that does kind of feel, you know, sometimes legit, like just mechanically it's awkward.
Oh, yeah.
That's something that I noticed the second time is that mechanically it was actually kind of awkward. You know, she's probably a 5'3", 5'4".
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm probably 5'10". So I'm sure you know that, and you've talked about that before, that sometimes that takes some figuring out because the shorter person's doing the thrusting instead of the taller one.
Right. It depends on leg length and things like that.
Yeah.
So can I be nosy and ask what position?
Well, I liked it actually just to be standing bent over on the table.
Uh-huh.
So I'm bent over and I have my head on the table.
Yeah, I have a lot of fantasies about that position because I'm actually a massage therapist.
Yeah.
So I got my table and everything and, you know, I'm like the ultimate professional in that life. But I still have a lot of fantasies about all the fun things you can do with a massage table.
Wait, it's really interesting. She has a massage table because anybody comes into the house, it's total plausible deniability. You know?
So it doesn't look too much like a boudoir.
No, it looks like massage therapist.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. Yeah, it's a total cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty brilliant, actually. But that was the position I like. But I'm used to when I'm alone, I'm usually on my feet or on my knees. I'm usually not laying down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that again, we were talking about you kind of burn in the same pathway to arousal and orgasm. A lot of that for me is standing or on my knees, you know, with a lot of tension in my legs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You just train yourself that way.
I know exactly what you mean because my burn pathway is laying on my back. So when it comes to any other position, I can get there, but it's not nearly as easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real interesting how easily trained we are to get really accustomed to one or two favorites, and then to learn a new one actually takes time.
Mm-hmm. But it's fun because then your repertoire, you know, enlarges.
As it were.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Now I brought a toy. In addition to the Inaros that time, I brought another toy with me to this party, the second one.
Mm-hmm.
I brought a fleshlight. Do you know what that is?
I do.
Yeah. So I brought that. And that was fun because she really got into that.
Was it something that you used yourself or that she used on you or both?
Well, I brought it. It's mine. And then, yeah, it was both. Yeah, she held it while I screwed it. And then I did it to myself a little bit. She got into that. She really liked watching that.
Well, that's fun because that way she could hold it, but she wasn't holding you. So probably still was the boundaries.
Right. but she grabbed me and stuck me in it, which I thought was interesting.
Nice.
Then she grabbed my cock and stuck me in it. I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. You crossed that boundary. I was like,
I would imagine that you have to have those boundaries of not touching. Otherwise, you know, unless you have those really strict at the beginning, I would imagine that you have to start on that end of things and then maybe relax it a little as you become more comfortable with the client, because otherwise they'd be all over you.
Right, right. And this time she actually pulled her boobs out of her bra this time. She's all, I'm going to give you a little treat. And then she pulled her boobs out of her bra, which was nice.
Oh, how fun.
So she's quite, she gets into it, which is great. She really enjoys it. I told her, I said in the middle of it, I'm like, you must like get all charged up. And then when your boyfriend comes back, you must like attack him. And she's all, yeah, pretty much.
That is so cool to hear. That must have been just really fun to hear right in the middle of everything. Because you always want to think that who you're with is getting turned on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was helpful to just be upfront that this is a situation where this is her house, you know, and her boyfriend is around. Looks like he lives there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's helpful to respect that and acknowledge it. And then she's probably going to feel more comfortable because I'm not in some sort of fantasy where she's kind of the only one in the situation.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Very clear about the reality of it. And that gives you a reason why she's got such strong boundaries anyway, because she has to maintain that relationship.
I'm still thinking about how has fun doing that and then jumps on her boyfriend when he comes home. Well, because, you know, I love it. And even if I don't orgasm, I'm so charged up when I'm done. It's like, okay, we're not finished now because I get mine. Yeah, we're not going to sleep. And no worries this time about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Relaxed about that a little bit.
Yeah. I think that, there's a certain amount of trust, you know, that her with her discretion and the way that she handles the situation and the way that, you know, everything is described and the process of payment is, you know, discreet, you know, it's not even called payment or anything, you know, so, you know, it's fine.
And did she do the same kind of initial consultation, sit down and talk with you a little bit?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, we talked a little bit about, you know, what we're going to do and what I brought with me. And yeah, definitely. I mean, this is kind of a really, it's reassuring that you know, she's very grounded, very easy to talk to, very accepting, you know what I mean? So there's no, obviously there's no judgment for somebody to do that type of thing, but it just, it's different when somebody kind of embodies that. You don't come across that very often.
The groundedness, you mean?
Yeah. And the level of acceptance of whatever, wherever somebody's at, you know, the lack of judgment, just kind of like wherever you're at is where you're at. You know, you don't come across that too often.
Just in general, just with normal people, you mean?
Yeah. Maybe I don't live in the right city or something.
I know, I'm sounding puzzled. Well, the way I was thinking of it was, you know, we all have our different levels of experience sexually and our areas of experience. So for me, it's pretty much a no-brainer that you're going to, when you start being intimate with someone new, that's what the whole exploration is who knows what.
Mm-hmm.
And who's into what. And that's the fun part of the discovery. But I would think that if you did this for a living, like she does, yeah, there can't be any judgment about, what do you mean you don't know how to do this? I mean, I'm sure that there are bad sex workers out there that might throw you some attitude. Maybe those are the ones that, you know, end up dominating guys. I mean, you know, who knows? But the groundedness was interesting.
Yeah, and she does, you know, dominatrix type stuff. You know, it's not the only thing that she does, but I'm trying to think if there's anything else that was really stood out.
How did you select what size of toy, or did she?
Well, she's got a beginner level. She has a silicone beginner level dildo that's basically a smooth cylinder, right? And it's not that big. It's not that thick. I think it's probably maybe 3/4 in diameter.
3/4 is pretty small. A beginner is usually an inch or an inch and a quarter.
Maybe it's an inch. So that's really the only one that I've used so far.
And was it the only one that she had, or you don't know?
Oh, no, she has bigger.
You answered that really fast. Were they like laying on a shelf?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, if you're used to the Aneros, though, you don't really not used to anything bigger in your own play.
The Aneros is pretty small.
It is, I know.
It's pretty comfortable, you know. It's meant to be left in, you know. It's not meant to be used quite as a dildo, right? I mean, it's meant to be left in and to move, you know, as you contract your muscles, it moves, right?
Right.
It's an absolutely brilliant device. I cannot recommend it enough. I'm thinking of upgrading to something even larger at some point.
They have larger models.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty small. Yeah, you're not used to, yeah, you gotta work your way up. What can I say?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny that you talk so, glowingly about that, because I, having just come back from that conference that I did, and I moderated the ass panel, right?
Yeah.
So, like, sitting there right next to me, one person down, was the CEO of Aneros. He was one of the guys on the panel. And the really interesting thing about this panel was that I asked the guys ahead of time, can I ask you personal questions? Now, one of them, Charlie Glickman, he's the one that wrote the book about Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure. He volunteered and said, you can ask me anything you want. About pegging, about prostate stimulation, anything. But you might want to check with the other guys and make sure, because not all men are okay being asked about that. And Tom Stewart was the guy that owned the Sports Sheets. And so he ended up telling a really funny story about his own experience with it, with discovering that he had pleasure in his prostate. But CT was kind of interesting. He presents as a very young man. It's very surprising that he's a CEO of a company. But he's this total hunk of a dude. He's like the V-shaped with all the muscles in the arms, wearing the tight T-shirt, you know, with the haircut. And all the women just swoon over him. And I said, can I ask you questions? And he said, sure. And he's kind of soft-spoken. And I asked him about it. And when I asked my question, he started talking, and he sort of didn't personalize it quite as much as I was trying to dig for. And I said, and so what did that feel like? And he just kind of leans forward and looks at me across the panel. And he said, well, what did your first orgasm feel like? And I'm like, okay, fair enough. Because what happened to him is he took over that company from a business standpoint as a CEO. He had no experience with the product. He actually used to work for Fleshlight.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So after a while, I'm not sure who confronted him, but somebody just kind of said, look, dude, you can't talk about this with authority unless you've tried it. And so he did. And now he waxes poetic about it, as long as he's not in front of a microphone. I know, right? It was great, though, because all three of the men showed just enough of that that vulnerability, that sort of, you know, being a little bit, having a little bit of wonder about the amount of pleasure that they could get. And that came out in the panel, and the audience just loved it.
Well, I have to agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some of the guys in the Aneros, have you ever been to the Aneros Forum?
Yeah, I have actually. Yeah. I haven't spent that much time out there, but I have.
So they talk about all those different kinds of orgasms. And interestingly enough, I can't remember who made this observation. I don't know if it was CT. It might have been Charlie. But they made the observation, you know, that that is a really unusual place because it's a whole bunch of men being really supportive and encouraging about sexual stuff with each other. That's the only place you find that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy goes, well, you know, I tried it, but I didn't really get much out of it. And I had this amazing sensation, but, you know, then nothing happened. And all the guys are like, dude, stick with it. It's okay. Just keep practicing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of when it was the first time I...
So at this point, my interviewee shared some personal details that we wanted to leave out of this interview. Suffice to say, he found himself in a very stressful situation, and so let's continue from there.
And I was carrying my stress in my pelvic floor muscles.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of almost like, so I'm going down this kind of this path, and I'm noticing that I'm having, you know, that irritation and that difficulty urinating. And I'm only like, at the time, I was only like 38, 39 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, this is really weird, you know? And so I go to one, you know, you go to the urologist and, you know, they do the finger test, you know? So it's like, you're not used to having something going backwards up your butt, right?
Right.
First guy basically says, the first urologist says, basically, well, you know, sometimes these things happen. I wouldn't really worry about it. And I do think that doctors don't do a great job of explaining things. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes.
Yes.
They actually do a really shitty job of explaining things. And I could tell you some stories too around my knee where things didn't make sense. But so I go to the first urologist and he's basically said, you know, There's sometimes these things happen and, you know, I wouldn't worry about it too much. If it's really bothering you, here are some Flomax samples, you know, and that's like a nuclear detonation for my problem, right? Cause I'm not 70 years old. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So here, take some Flomax, no big deal, major drug and call me in the morning basically. And I go back home and I'm like, well, shit, I'm not going to take Flomax for this. You know, I'm going to go get a second opinion, right? Because it's bugging me. You know, I'm feeling like I have to pee all the time. You know, I'm having that irritation. I go to a second urologist, and I think this guy was flat out crazy. Because I go, he puts me, he does the finger test. Then he does the milking of the prostate.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of milking the prostate, I don't know if you've ever heard a man talk about this before, but now I know what women feel like when they're giving birth, because it was the most intense pain.
Oh, wow.
I'd ever experienced for him to squeeze out some prostatic fluid.
Uh-huh.
So here we are in the examination room, you know, he's got his finger up my ass and he's mm-hmm. pushing on my prostate so hard that all I can feel is like this charge of energy going up to the top of my head. I'll never forget this. I'm blinded. Like you're looking out your eyes and you can't see. Everything is really like so blurry. You can't
Whoa.
See. And I can feel my voice welling into my throat, involuntarily screaming.
Wow.
Yeah, it was extremely intense. Now, the thing is that it gave me relief from the issue.
Yeah, well, that's what the Aneros is designed to do, but not, but much, much more gently.
Yeah, and so it gave me relief, and I talked to him about it afterward, and I said, you know, you, number one, you didn't warn me that this was going to hurt so fucking much, you fucking asshole. Right? And not so much language. You didn't warn me, you know, and that was not cool. And he apologized and he explained that the thing that most guys don't know or don't talk about is that high stress. He says lawyers, high stress career guys, come in on a regular basis to get their prostates milked, to get this tension relieved.
Mm-hmm.
So this is bullshit. Then he puts me on antibiotics. That's a whole other story. Oh, he puts me on Levaquin, and I get the side effects where my joints start to ache, like my tendons are degrading in real time. It's
nasty. That's ridiculous, because it's not an infection. It's not an infection.
That's right. And he's starting to go down this second urologist is basically, you know, going down this, well, this is the Stanford protocol, and we don't really know, you know, we don't really know if it's an infection, so we just prescribe antibiotics automatically, and that's what we do. And mm-hmm. so he gave it to me, and I had this really severe side effect, so I quit them.
Wow.
And then he basically attributed that to oh, I guess we knocked out the infection. It's like, come on. So I go back to the first urologist again, and I tell him my sob story. I said, look, you know, this is what I did because of what you said. You know, I don't know if it's the right thing to do or if I shouldn't have done it, but this is what I was thinking at the time. And I said, I wanted a second opinion, but I came back to you because this other guy was so crazy. And he goes, oh my God. And he just gave me this look. Like I'd never seen a look on another man's face that was just like pure empathy. The guy realized, oh my God, I didn't mean to send this guy off in this direction. He felt really bad.
Did he send you off to a second opinion? Or you just said I went there because, you know, I didn't get the satisfaction from you.
Yeah, I said, you know, you can't just send me on my way with Flomax and not really give me any explanation. I'm still having the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him the story, and he goes, okay, well, let me check you out again. And sure enough, another finger at my butt. Not painful, just the finger check. And he's like, you know what? You're normal-sized. You're not swollen in any way. You really don't have an infection. I really don't think you do. And then he finally says this thing. He goes, you know, sometimes we men, we store stress in our pelvic floor muscles, and that puts constant pressure on the prostate, and that will irritate it.
And wouldn't it have been nice if when you first came there, he said, are you having a lot of stress in your life?
Thank you. Not to mention sexual stress.
Yeah. Right?
The reason I'm telling you this story is because that got me on the path of, wow, you know, maybe the prostate needs to be massaged. I started doing some research, you know, about that notion of BPH and all that. I think you mentioned that actually too, that it helps prevent it.
Right.
So I was kind of going at it from that standpoint. Then I discovered Neros. Then I discovered the erotic aspect of it. Right.
And so you're another person who entered into this via the health path.
The health path. But I think the intensity of that pain set me off on that path too.
Interesting. In what way?
I think that, I don't know. It's just a hunch that the intensity of that experience opened me up to that possibility of having that be an erotic pathway.
Because of the intensity of it, you just kind of knew that something was there, kind of?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so when people would talk about the benefits or the enhancement of it, the extra pleasure of it, I believed it immediately. I didn't need to be convinced.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was like, when they said, oh yeah, you know, it'll feel awesome too, I'm like, I believe it. I didn't have to go into it. When I went into, you know, the Neros thing, I'm like, yeah, I'm doing this from a health angle, but I know it's going to feel good. On some level, I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was because of the painful experience.
I've had to walk some very careful lines because I do massage on a bunch of people. And one of my clients that I see really regularly, he said, well, you know, we're going to have to skip next week's appointment because I'm going in and having a procedure done. And I said, okay. And I'm not nosy. You know, I would have left it at that. It's no problem. And then finally he said, well, I'm having some urination problems again. So I'm going back in for a repeat procedure that they'd done before. And what he was going in for was they take a laser and they carve out some of the prostate gland surrounding the ureter tube so that the swelling affects it less and so that your urination can return more to normal, which, in my opinion, is rather barbaric. And
Wow.
I couldn't say anything. I mean, how do you explain that?
Wow. Yeah. For my part, I hope that all this play is just going to extend my sexual career. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and you might be right about that, because what I'm running into now, when I get all these different letters and things, it's not uncommon for me occasionally to hear from a man who says that he's had no experience whatsoever with the pegging and with prostate play. So he's, unlike you, no solo play. And then all of a sudden he starts to explore his own ass, and then he gets into the pegging, and the pegging, guys write and say, it's like I have firmer erections. It's like one guy said, for about a week after she pegs me, my erections are firmer and I stay harder longer, and even my wife notices. So it's just, I don't know, the whole way that it affects that whole system and the genitals is just astounding to me. I mean, one of the things that I asked CT on the panel was to describe the beginnings of the Anaeros Company, because he and I talked about it, and I knew the story, and I told him I was going to ask him to do that, because they started the company. It was two Asian people who, a couple who had this design for a prostate massager, and they started a website called High Island Health, and it's all very professional. White coats. They eventually did studies. You won't find the word orgasm there anywhere. And pretty quickly after the company started, I can't remember the time period, they started having guys write in and say, I'm having these side effects. And obviously they were not bad side effects. And so they finally started talking about it, and they realized that there was a whole different and additional potential for a business here. And thus was born the Anaeros website, which is all red and black and sexy looking and talks about orgasms all over the place. And they don't sell on the High Island Health, which is still there, they don't sell all of the different models, but they sell the original, and they sell the one that's made for massaging the inner rectum walls, for hemorrhoids, to get rid of hemorrhoids.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I just think it's hysterical that it's the same thing. I mean, the High Island Health people have actually done a study of 200 guys, and 85% of them had improvement in the BPH, 85 to 90%. So,
That's interesting.
And
Yeah.
the only place I could find anything about prostate massage, other than the dire warnings that you're going to kill someone, basically, is, are, well, no, really, the medical people say, well, if you have a condition of sepsis, which means infection. So, okay, if you've got a prostate and it's infected, what they're saying is if you go in there and you poke at it with something sharp, no less, that you could actually cause the release of all of this sepsis into the body, and it could kill you. The pain that you felt, it would be like 20 million times worse than that. You can't poke a guy like that and not have him react. Plus, putting anything sharp inside the anus to begin with is really stupid. So there's all of these really stupid assumptions that they're making, just in order to scare you, is what I think. So they can sell more medication, so they can do more procedures. Because deep in Google, I found a reference about in Korea, it's pretty well known that Korean mothers train their daughters on how to do prostate massage in order to keep their husbands healthy.
Yeah, in Asia, this what I read poking around the internet, in Asia, this goes back thousands of years. And to your point about the assumption that you're gonna get sepsis from playing around with it. I mean, there's this assumption that it's infected. Any inflammation that's not BPH is an infection, and that's what I got from, especially from this second urologist. was that he's going down the Stanford protocol or whatever that is. And the assumption is, well, if the first two things don't work, then it must be infected, you know?
Wow.
And the thing is that they're like, well, and it's tough to cure the infection because the antibiotics don't make it through the biofilm layer and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, you guys really don't know what's going on, do you?
Well, and if it's an infection, there are other signs of an infection. There's a fever. There's all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's crazy. And I even had another client who her husband was going into, I think he was going to have a procedure done, a biopsy, some kind of, but it had to something to do with the prostate. And again, I just really have to control myself. I mean, if it was a friend, I would absolutely tell them. But at this point in time, it's kind of like I'm not really ready to just jump right out there and tell them exactly how much I know about prostates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the irony is that you're probably more an expert than anybody.
Well, about the pleasure, perhaps. It's funny, though, because I hear you talking about the biofilm and the this and that, and I'm like, whoa, you went digging deeper than I did.
Well, you know my background.
So. Yes, yes.
So you know that I'm going to go so far that I'm going to make assumptions I shouldn't be making anyway. You know enough to be dangerous just because I have that background.
Mm-hmm. Well, the frustrating part for me is that, you know, I actually thought about getting into this because, you know, I've done massage for 25 years. I'm very, very good at it. And then all of a sudden I embrace my passion for asses. And then I discover all of this prostate stuff. And then I discover the pelvic floor stuff. And I thought, who better to do this than me? And
why not?
It's illegal. My massage license specifically says no insertions. You cannot insert anything when you do a massage on someone. Seriously.
Doesn't mean it doesn't happen though, right?
Oh, well, of course. But I was looking for some legitimacy, you know, and I had a couple of guys write and just beg me to do a prostate massage because they needed relief. And I think they probably would fall into that category of man that you spoke of just that, you know, the really stressed out guy who just goes into the doctor and has this done every once in a while.
Yeah. I was shocked when they told me that.
Well, a lot less doctors are doing it now. I think maybe it's a fear of malpractice.
Malpractice? More of the gay stigma. Maybe, you know,
perhaps.
I don't know. I really don't. I don't know. It's just such a bizarre thing how the society, we just don't seem to do very well with sexual health. You know?
No, I completely agree. Completely agree. And the deeper I dive into the whole pegging and the emotional stuff and all of that, the more I am actually finding that the complete emotional space and the vulnerability that happens when you really are in that total letting go space can be very emotionally healing. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really interesting. And there's a guy way back when, he's passed away now. I think his name is Jack Morin. I have one of his books and he was on the path to talking all about this, but he was completely blackballed from his community. And he went off and continued to do what he wanted to do anyway, and he had quite the following. But it's a shame when people make discoveries and things like this. Like, it's just taken forever for the community to even begin to talk about the pelvic floor muscles. It's mm-hmm. crazy. So it's really cool that that guy, when you went back to him, at least knew about it. But I would have been tempted to say, well, this is great. This is good information. Now, I really could have used that the first time you came in, and I think it would be helpful to talk to every single person who comes in about that first. Why would you give them medication before you would ask about that?
Yeah. Yeah. It was bizarre. It was just bizarre. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, Doctors are just, but in my experience, they're notoriously bad communicators.
Yeah.
Notoriously bad. I mean, it's not, it's, if there's anything that, that profession needs training in is
communication. Communication.
Yeah.
Okay, so
there are a couple things that come to mind about the second experience that I just want to relate to you that were particularly one in particular is as I was watching her, she was stroking the strap on like it was hers. And that watching her do that was a huge turn on for me.
Nice.
That surprised me. I was not expecting that. And when I saw her doing like really into it, like exactly, if it was her own dick, I was kind of like, whoa, she's actually like really owning this as if it's a part of her own body.
Uh-huh.
And that was a huge turn on.
Mm.
I thought that was really interesting. And the other thing that I didn't ask her, but I wanted to ask her, and that's probably a good one for next time, was, has she ever had a couple in there? A man and a woman at the same time, and what kind of combinations you could make thereof, of that.
You mean involved with pegging as well?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, the couple might be having regular intercourse, and then she's pegging one of them, or taking turns.
Well, pegging is a term particularly specific to the man, but yeah, that sounds like something that just came out of your fantasy there.
Yeah, that's a new fantasy for me.
Mm-hmm.
That one can get a lot of mileage out of that one.
Well, and you know from your own experience that you could pull it off. And the reason I say that way is because not all guys, when they're being anally penetrated, can actually stay hard. So
yeah, I know that it's possible. I wasn't able to do it around here, but I'll probably get there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyway, just wanted a little afterthought in there just as I remembered it.
Right, and so if you were offering any kind of advice for guys who are kind of on the fence, you know, considering, should I go to a pro for this, should I not, what would you tell them?
Well, first off, I think in retrospect, I think my intuition was right when I went to this person's website and I saw the level of detail that she had on her process and her boundaries was very detailed, and she made it very clear that if you didn't follow the process, you were out.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me some reassurance in the sense that I could tell she was a disciplined and conscientious individual. That did give me some comfort. And I think if you're shopping around for this kind of thing, anything less, I think might be putting you at risk.
Mm-hmm.
It was truly professional. At least her online presence was very, very professional and very, very thorough and detailed as to what to expect and how to go through the process. And she also was making sure that you know that she's vetting you as much as you're vetting her.
And when you were filling out her forms and things and giving her information, I ran across this recently, someone being surprised that a sex worker would actually ask for your real name. And I said, well, of course they would. They want to know who you are. They want to see your driver's license. They want to check you out. So is that what she did?
She didn't look at my driver's license, but she did take personal information. I mean, she took name, email address, phone number, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, in doing and filling out that form, I was kind of a little bit edgy about that, but I kind of had to trust that really she's in a lot of ways much more vulnerable than I am in the situation. So that logically made sense, you know, that she's probably running background checks online on all the guys that she's been. She's probably checking, you know. And so she should be investing in doing, you know, criminal background checks on her clients.
Well, I wouldn't think that you could do that unless you had a driver's license number or social security number.
I don't know. Yeah, no, she didn't take that personal information. And honestly, I didn't go into the situation with my ID on me.
Was that purposeful?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, I mean, you know, I don't have my ID with me, you know.
Sorry, don't have my ID. My name's Jim.
Yeah, I'm Jim. And so, you know, that may or may not help your case. I don't know. But it was something that went through my mind. So that's number one is how thorough and detailed and conscientious is this person?
Mm-hmm.
How professional is their image, their online presence? My second piece of advice is, will they have a conversation with you before you get started, right? So that you're not in a position where you're laying down your money and then all of a sudden you're not comfortable with what's happening or where it's headed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another thing. You know, what's this person's attitude about a pre-consultation? You know, so that's something that I would ask for. In addition to that, I have a discussion about safety, all the objects, all the toys. You know, what does she do? What are they made out of? You know, in my case, I was like, I want, you know, condoms and that kind of thing is an extra protection. So that's another conversation. So, I mean, you're vetting each other as much as possible at the beginning. I think that would be my advice at that point.
Yeah, it sounds like you were just very careful, but you're very detail-oriented. That's the kind of guy you are.
Yeah.
And that made you feel more secure.
Yeah, and so was she, very detail-oriented. So that made a lot of sense to me. But I think, you know, it's different in the sense that I went to a specialist in this, right? I didn't go to a conventional prostitute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit different because you're the vulnerable one even more, right? Because you're the guy, you're going to get penetrated, and that makes you even more vulnerable. And for me, it being my first time, I wanted to make sure that she was going to take that into account, you know, and be very responsive to my needs in that regard. And she was, and she made that clear. You know, you don't necessarily want to go in with some woman who's kind of not cautious about it, kind of casual about that. You know what I mean?
Oh, I so know what you mean. Yeah. And that's, I get that question a lot about how careful I am, you know, it's interesting. It's, and it's funny because if I send a guy to my website, I think it's pretty obvious I know a lot about this. And they're like, well, I don't think I can take a big thing right off the bat. And I'm like, yeah, I got that. Kind of like teach people how to do this. And I teach them to take their time. So, yeah, that's one of the most important things. And I'm so glad that you found someone who approached it gently and responsibly.
Mm-hmm. Because I was Googling around for this. You know, obviously, I'm going to be searching Google for this type of thing. And I did come across other providers that market themselves in the same niche.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not nearly as professional or reassuring based on what they were putting out there.
Hmm.
Coming in more from, you know, not having their own website, not explaining their process. You know, they have an ad on another website that's a bunch of ads. And coming in from the dominatrix angle, which is not what necessarily I was looking for, was not a woman to be a dominatrix to me. I wanted a woman to be kind and gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, treat me like a virgin, which is what I was. So that's one thing you want to look for, I would say, too, is make sure that they have the same, they're on the same page as far as what you want.
Right, right.
So it's really the burden is on you to really check them out as much as they're probably going to check you out. And if they're not checking you out, that would also give me pause as well.
A right? Huge red flag. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if they're really casual about who you are, then that's a big red flag too.
Mm-hmm.
Because even this person, she made it very clear in the very beginning. She said, look, you know, I'm not even really taking new clients, but she said because I was a first timer and the way that I described what I was looking for, she said that was what got me through the door. So you may find that some of these individuals aren't even really taking new people right now. So it may be that the ones that are better at what they do, they have their client list and they're not really looking to, you know, expand it that much. Yeah. And one more thing, I mean, that she did that was interesting compared to the other women that advertised this is that she did not show her face on her website.
Ah,
which I thought was really interesting. And she explained that on her website saying, obviously I'm trying to be discreet, not just for, you know, you, but for me too. And the more discreet I am, the better off we'll be, you know, and whereas in the other ones were showing, you know, their whole naked bodies sometimes, right? Like just regular prostitution. So, or regular escorts, that kind of thing. So in that sense, I mean, she's really a professional specialist, you know,
mm-hmm.
Pretty remarkable, that she was so easy to find and so conveniently located for me. So,
well, you know, give yourself some credit for your researching skills.
Yeah, I'm good at that too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and you were on a mission.
Thanks to you, Ruby. You're the one who put the thought in my head.
I'm the one that put it all in your head.
You put the thought in my head. Yeah, had you not suggested it, I would not have gone. I would not have tried it.
That's so interesting. Because you got on the first phone call and you're like, well, I took your advice. Yeah, I put it out there. I put it out there, and I like people to know that it's an option, because, yeah, women are hard to find. They're just hard to find who are into this. Mm-hmm. And then when you get the woman, then you're all concerned about is she having a good time. And by the time you get to your own pleasure, it's a ways down the line, and maybe she didn't even like it, and, oh, there's so many risks. Plus, wanting to have some kind of intimate bond with someone beforehand, which is, you know, that came to mind when you were talking about the dating sites, because it's an investment of time to start a relationship, to get your emotions into it, and to connect with someone and have some intimacy. And then if you present that and they reject you, ooh, not good.
Yeah.
So maybe it's better to lead with your kinks sometimes.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start doing it more and more. Yeah.
Well, just the most delightful part of that initial interview was the very first part when you said, I don't have anybody to talk to about this.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought about that since we talked last. I thought about it and I'm like, you know, damn it, actually there are.
Well, that's good to know. That's nice.
Yeah, there actually are. And, you know, it would be a good thing for me to... In a couple of cases, I haven't talked to these people in quite a long time, but it would be interesting to reconnect and tell them the story.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see the look of wonder and shock on their face.
So once again, I'd like to thank my interviewee for so openly sharing all of this information with me and my listeners. I hope that you guys listening, that maybe you, if you were thinking about going to a pro for your first pegging experience or for additional pegging experiences because you just really miss it, that now you have a little bit different idea of what that might be like. And also, there was that whole section in this interview about prostate health, about this man's experience of having prostate issues that strictly were related to stressed out pelvic floor muscles. This information is so valuable that I'm probably going to crop that out by itself and post it up as something for everybody to listen to. Goodness, this is such good information. These first-person anecdotal things are invaluable because the more and more I look at the situation, it's pretty obvious that they're not really sure what's going on with the BPH. And I think probably the folks at High Island and Eros, they have the best idea of what's going on and certainly the best way to treat it. And here's my disclaimer. I'm not a doctor. I've never been trained medically. I'm not giving anybody advice. I'm just throwing it out there in the public knowledge source. And I appreciate the man who called in and talked to me both times that he went to this lovely professional and shared all this information for doing the same, for contributing to our knowledge base. This is the way we all learn. And I had so much fun with both of these interviews, and I hope you all enjoy them. So, happy pegging, everyone. And I'm going to skip all the sign-off stuff because I know you've been waiting for a long time for this interview. So there you go. And I will talk to you next time.